This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, the first day of June 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on today's program, why your physical wallet may be endangered. Digital wallets are now on the marketplace, and our tech guide explains what they are and what they may be like in the future.
We also have previews of tomorrow night's entry in the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival in Fayetteville and this weekend's International Festival in Rogers. And at the end of the program, your chance to win two weekend passes to the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend that takes place tomorrow through Sunday. First, a change in the way Bentonville sirens will be used during storms. If the weather is clear Friday, the city will sound storm sirens for its usual monthly test. But there will be a slight change, according to Dan White, the city's fire chief.
For several years, the alert sound of our siren and the all-clear sound of our siren have basically been identical, with the only difference being that the alert sound was a 3-minute long steady blast and the all clear was a 45 second long steady blast. Some folks would have a difficult time differentiating what they were actually hearing, and it basically it took 45 seconds to be able to tell if it was an all clear or if it was an alert tone. So we felt that it would be advantageous to all of our residents to be able to change that all clear tone to something that more readily recognizable. So as of Friday, we will be changing that all clear tone from a steady 45 second blast to it will be more of an undulating up and down kind of sound. The company calls it a fast wail. Basically, the siren will go up and down several times for 45 seconds. So it should be a lot more recognizable for those listening for the all clear.
And I guess the confusion I can understand the confusion, because if the siren has gone off for 3 minutes to indicate that there is reason to take cover, and then you sound the all clear for 45 seconds, often when that all clear comes, when a tornado warning has expired or been canceled, the skies can still be somewhat intimidating. So it might be hard for someone during the real use of that siren to make out the difference.
Sure. I think that's a great example. Sometimes also people may actually not hear the first tone and then hear the second tone but not really know what it is they're listening to, or vice versa. If one night here recently we had to blow our sirens twice. So we blew the 3-minute steady blast for a tornado warning, and then about an hour and a half later, we blew the all clear, and about an hour after that, we had to blow the alert again. So it can be kind of confusing unless they can more readily differentiate the tone. So we thought this would be a good change. The FEMA recommends the steady blast for the alert sound, and so we're going to stay with that, but we're going to change the all clear so people will be able to know better when it's time to come out of their shelter.
How does the operation, if there is a tornado warning, is there someone's hand that has to push a button to ignite the siren?
Well, I make the decision to actually sound the sirens by watching the weather, and to the National Weather Service. So I make that determination. When I do, I call our dispatch, which is located over at the police department in Bentonville, and they actually have a console there where they touch a series of buttons and set off the sirens.
And how many sirens, do you know off the top of your head, how many sirens you have in Bentonville?
I think we have about 16.
And it can be heard pretty much anywhere in the city limits.
Yes, they're strategically placed all around town, and the type of siren we use is a kind of a mechanical motor-driven siren, which gives us a really good range from each siren. It basically turns on top of a pole and just puts out a really loud, steady blast. But because it's a motorized type siren, it limits us on how we can vary that sound. And about the only thing we can do is give it a pattern of this up and down type sound. And that's really about all we can do with that. But it should be easily differentiated now.
And so on Friday afternoon, with weather permitting, the regularly scheduled test, you'll do the alert and then the all clear as a test?
That's correct.
So people can hear what the new all clear will sound like.
Exactly. We have been planning to do this, but we didn't want to make the change until the people had a chance to hear it in test mode before an actual event.
All right, Chief Dan White, thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
Dan White is the Bentonville Fire Chief. He spoke with me yesterday about the changes in the city's tornado sirens. The monthly test is scheduled for early Friday afternoon.
June marks the middle of any calendar year and offers a chance to either look back or look ahead. Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net is taking the middle of the year approach to the economy and recently sat down with Bob Williams, the Senior Vice President of Delta Trust Investments, a firm with offices throughout Arkansas. Roby asked him for an assessment of the first half of the year's economic performances.
Well, it's been a much stronger year than people had expected. A number of people had been calling for pullbacks in the market, which we obviously haven't seen yet. We're very pleased about that. The economic statistics as they're coming out right now, with the exception of home sales, which were down very hard last month, all generally tend to be trending in the right direction. And that's considered being absorbed very well by the market. And I think we're seeing buying resulting from it. And it's pretty encouraging, quite frankly.
Let's talk about some of your investment clients overall. What kind of mindset are they in these days when they're coming in to assess their investment portfolios? Are they looking to play kind of more defense at this juncture, or has there been a little bit more of an aggressive mindset set in?
Well, generally the investors are remaining cautious, but investor confidence, as that's measured in the broader sense, is showing a strong increase in confidence in the economy. The world economy is generally continuing to improve. There are still concerns about a default in Greece and some other concerns overseas, but all in all, really, we feel that the economy is continuing to improve, not only domestically, but internationally as well.
Well, Bob, we have just completed the latest round of kind of quarterly earnings reports that have come out. At least we've seen almost all of the Arkansas public firms report and most of the national ones. Kind of what's been your assessment of what kind of quarter it has been? Have you been, more or less pleased with the earnings results that you've seen? How have the financial markets responded to the publicly traded firms and their earnings reports this past quarter?
Well, the one thing we've seen is that companies have been meeting or beating expectations on the upside, which has been very positive. Investors obviously received that quite well. You look at companies like Dillard's that have had astronomical run-ups, and clearly it's a sign that the investor is certainly has confidence, at least in the Arkansas stocks.
Well, let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about the Federal Reserve Bank and some of its changes it's been making lately. By and large, its policy has not changed. We're still seeing some of the same monetary policy, some of the same managing the economy policies that we have seen for quite some time. But there has been some openness now. The Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is now giving press conferences for the very first time after open market committee meetings to address questions. What's your takeaway to all that?
Well, I think one of the things the Fed wants people to be aware of is that, they are actively trying to manage this economy, and they're trying to do that from a public relations standpoint for the first time. All in all, things seem to be going pretty well. There's no sign that inflation is heating up right now, and as a result of that, the Fed's feeling no pressure to raise interest rates. Obviously, if you're an investor living on a fixed income, it's pretty slim pickings right now in terms of trying to find some good interest rates to buy. But all in all, things are pretty positive, and I think this new openness from the Fed is a sign that they think things are better and that they want to communicate that better to the investment community and to individual investors who maybe don't follow the investments on a daily basis.
Let's say that we see more repair happen in the economy. We see the Fed's monetary policy, their economic policies tend to be working. We see the economy improve. What would you look for the Feds to do in the next wave, the next step of reforms, the next things that they might consider in terms of some sort of policy shift?
Well, the two big things right now that are driving inflation are food and energy prices. And the Fed's going to do what they can to control those prices, even though they're driven by the free market. We've seen the government in the past open up the strategic petroleum reserves as a means of trying to drive oil prices down. We're not hearing near the emphasis on ethanol that we were. Again, that's in an effort, I think, to get corn prices back down into reasonable prices, because corn is such an important agricultural commodity in this country. You know, it's used to feed a lot of animals, and it's used in so many different products that the shortage in corn due to ethanol production really had a much stronger ripple effect than anyone had predicted.
All right, last question for you, Bob. Looking down the road 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, just somewhere in the next month or so, kind of what are you going to be keeping your eyes on? What are you going to be watching for in terms of what might impact the financial markets?
Well, I think we should definitely be keeping an eye on inflation. That's generally a monthly number that's released. But, you know, keeping an eye on oil prices, grain prices, commodity prices right now are having a big driver on how the market's moving. Watching oil pull back from over $104 to $90 had a very positive response from the stock market, and I think it will in the bond market as well continue. But really, the commodity prices right now, I think, are a big driver, and were the Fed to decide to make a move, that would be the other big driver. Right now, inflation is low enough that I don't anticipate the Fed coming in and trying to move rates up. But if something were to happen that would drive that to occur, it could be very tough.
All right. He is Bob Williams, Senior Vice President with Delta Trust Investments. As always, Bob, thanks for your time. Thanks for your insight.
Thanks, Robbie.
Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at vzw.com/small business. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It used to be that a book was something you bought at a bookstore and a wallet something you gave or received on Father's Day. The digital revolution is changing everything. To help us understand the new wallets and the new e-books and the latest in that technology is Tyrell Dennison. He's our digital ambassador at Ozarks at Large. Tyrell, how are you?
I'm doing good, Kyle.
Let's start with wallets.
Yeah, last week Google had a big announcement, and the focus of that announcement was what is now being called Google Wallet.
Okay, a Google Wallet. And this will eventually replace the wallet I have now?
That is what they're going for. That's the philosophy behind Google Wallet. They laid that out in their vision. You can go to google.com/wallet. And look at that there, and they say what all they want Google Wallet to be able to do. But at this point, the main purpose of Google Wallet is for making purchases. Mm-hmm. So they already have this technology out there. A lot of MasterCard customers have what's called a PayPass, and you can wave it in front of things at certain retail establishments. I believe Exxon Mobil had a card that you could put up by the pump.
Right, and sometimes it's a key fob that right. You wave in something in front of something.
Right, and so this technology has been around for a little bit. It uses what's called near-field communication, which is a form of RFID, like we have developing here at the university. And what happens is you put the device with the NFC chip near a receiver, and the two communicate. Mm-hmm. And it gets the information it needs, and it charges you, and you go on from there, as if you've just processed a credit card payment.
So this is something that will not necessarily be in my phone, but it's another device I'll have to be carrying with me?
Well, no, that's the good thing. That's what Google is doing. They want to take that key fob or that piece of plastic and integrate it into a device you already have with you, your cell phone. And so they are doing that with the RFID chips, or the NFC chips, that are in the Nexus S model phone. Google only releases one technically Google phone, and it's their Nexus line. The first one was with T-Mobile, but now they've switched to Sprint, and the Nexus S is the first phone with the built-in NFC chip for Google to use with Google Wallet. So if you are one of those lucky few with a Nexus S around here, you're set in the first step to being able to use Google Wallet.
I mean, gosh, I'm used to Apple being the people who start this off. Is my iPhone going to be a potential wallet at some point?
It will, and Apple's been looking into this technology for a while. It's rumored that the next iPhone, iPhone 5, well, if that's the next iPhone, you never can tell with Apple, will have the NFC technology in it. They, Google and Apple tend to end up in horse races with things. And so whoever can get it out first, or if you don't get it out first, you try and do it the most stylish way after that. Right. And so that tends to be the Apple way, is let someone run ahead and then we come out with a cooler version right behind you.
So say I have this Nexus S and I decide to have a Google Wallet, or eventually I have an iPhone that has the Apple Wallet or whatever. Shouldn't I feel a little skittish about this? I mean, if I reach in my wallet right now, I have a $10 bill that I can pay for something with. No one's going to really take that identity theft through my $10 bill.
Right. Google's taken a lot of steps to keep that, to keep security issues at bay. The chip itself doesn't communicate with the phone. It's a separate thing, which communicates with your Google account through the cloud. And you will link, in this case, Citibank MasterCards can be linked to it pretty much instantaneously. If you don't have a Citi MasterCard, you can link a Google Wallet account and put funds in there. And so you can keep that separate so that you don't have to worry about if you lose your phone. People can run wild with your credit card, although it's very comparable to if you lose your wallet. You have to call and cancel your credit cards. Now, if you lose your phone, you'll need to call and cancel your phone service and your credit card.
What if I'm on a business trip and I need a receipt?
Well,
can I get a receipt?
One of the great things, well, with any purchase, you'll get a receipt.
Okay.
But they're actually looking at moving towards digital receipts, so that when you make your purchase, rather than having to carry around the paper, that digital receipt will be emailed to you or sent to you however you prefer. And so it'll be a good way to cut down on pockets full of receipts, or business transactions can be very easily organized that way.
Say I don't have the Nexus S and it's a while before the others come out and Apple develops theirs. Is there any way I can do this without having the Nexus S, or will I just have to wait?
You can, actually. When it fully releases, it hasn't fully released yet, and it'll just kind of trickle out slowly over the summer. You can, again, go to googlewallet.com and sign up for stuff. And there's a couple criteria that will kind of put you to the front of the list. The first is owning a Nexus S. Mm-hmm. The second is having a Citi MasterCard. If you've got both of those,
you're ready to roll.
You're ready to roll pretty quickly, and they'll try and get you into that group. But as you have less of those things, you go further down the list. Eventually, though, they're actually going to release a sticker that you can put. They'll probably express to put it on your phone, because that's the whole purpose, is to put it on a device you already have on you. But you could technically put that sticker on anything and use it as that card.
Oh my gosh.
So the back of your phone, or put it on your wallet conveniently enough, or a key fob or anything like that, and that becomes a Google Wallet that you can wave over anything that responds to Google Wallet devices.
Now, I'm imagining that if I'm on Rodeo Drive, or I'm Times Square, or I'm, you know, on the Miracle Mile there in Chicago, I can use this. Is it going to be rolled out to big cities first?
Well, largely. But the good thing is, because of PayPass and what MasterCard has done with their key fobs and things like that, that technology is already out. And in fact, we've got places in the area. I believe the Brahms on College has that technology.
In Fayetteville?
In Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Some of the BP gas stations in Fayetteville. The Best Buy and Office Depot and Rogers have those. This is all according to, again, if you go to google.com/wallet, there's a thing that says where this works. And you can enter your zip code and it'll tell you places you can use that technology. So this will be rolling out for a while throughout the summer and into the future. And this is definitely a big shift in how we process things. But it's interesting to see that we've already got the ability to do that in this area.
Okay. All right. So you've already taken... Okay. So now you're taking the wallet out of my back pocket. What about books? E-books continue to grow, and there's even more growth there?
Yeah. Barnes & Noble had a big announcement last week as well, and they released their newest e-book reader, which is a new version of the Nook 2.0, if you will. And they're really excited. Nook's done really well, particularly the Nook Color is actually the second highest.
And that's the name, the Nook Color.
Nook Color is the name of their color e-reading device.
Gotcha.
Which is basically a full-functioning tablet at this point. It's the second best-selling tablet on the market. It's right behind the iPad. So and largely because it's so affordable, it's $250 for more or less a full-functioning tablet. And they have a huge app store. You can play Angry Birds on your Nook or read children's books or do all kinds of things. So that's really successful. And so what they've done now is they decided to, we've got this tablet that allows you to do so much, but we know we have readers who are still very dedicated to reading. So since this has been so successful, let's relook at how we did our dedicated e-reader that does nothing but books. And so they took the e-ink technology that they used on the first Nooks, the difference being with the Nook Color, they use an LCD screen, kind of like your computer, so it's backlit, and that has some inherent advantages and disadvantages.
Right.
I personally prefer reading on e-ink because it reads like a book. It looks like a book page. It's not backlit, so you have to read it in lighting just like you would a normal book, but it seems, for me at least, to have less strain on my eyes. So they've taken that technology and they've added it to a touch screen. So you're flipping through a book, touching the pages, or moving through your menus by touching your screen, but it's still all that beautiful e-ink black and white color.
Mm-hmm. And it's lighter, is that right?
It is. It's lighter, it's smaller than the first generation Nooks, and as well as the Nook Color. It's about a 6-inch screen, so it's very portable, and then it weighs half a pound.
and you mentioned it's like the iPad. I'm more familiar with the iPad, but you have apps, and you can get the New York Times and things like that, and the NPR app. Will that happen with this?
That won't happen with the new Nook. If you're wanting apps and you're wanting to do a lot of stuff, go with the Nook Color. That's going to give you a lot of functionality. If you want just something to read on, you want the new Nook. One of the great things about it, because it's so focused, is they allow for 2 months of battery life off one charge.
What?
They want you to be able to take this and use it just like a book, so you don't want to have it plugged in all the time. So plug it in once every 2 months, and you can read for 2 months on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so you'd have to charge it 6 times a year?
Approximately, depending on how often you read.
Right.
So.
Wow. Now that's something.
Yeah, it they're real proud of it, as they should be. It doubles the reading time of any other e-reader on
the
market.
Can it hold more books than the previous incarnation? Do you know?
It can. They have an expandable card slot, so it starts off with 2 gigs of room, and that can hold about 1,000 books. But you can put an SD card in the back of it that's up to 32 gigabytes, and that will give you approximately 16,000 books.
Now the Nook is a Barnes & Noble product.
That's correct.
So does that mean it's only, I don't know, somehow you have to go through barnesandnoble.com to get the books?
You don't. There's some advantages to doing that. You'll automatically have access to the Barnes & Noble store when you log on to any Wi-Fi with your Nook. And then anytime you go into the store, into a Barnes & Noble store, you get offers for like a free coffee, or you can read a book for as long as you want in Barnes & Noble. So there are some advantages to doing that, but they were very deliberate to work well with others, so to speak. They don't want to be the mean kids on the playground. So you can actually take your Nook, and you'll have to plug it into your computer to do things like this, but you can download ebooks from your public library that will stay with you for, I believe, 2 weeks.
Right. I think that's how the Rogers Public Library is doing theirs, that it's a couple of weeks and you have to renew or whatever.
Right. And so you can put that on your Nook. Or if you're a big supporter of local business, I know our own bookstore here in Fayetteville, Nightbird Books, now has an ebook store through Google, and those can be easily put right on your Nook. They actually have directions on how to do that through some links on the Nightbird Book page. So
you can still have your half-pound collection of books and feel good about buying from your local retailer.
Exactly.
If they're a participant.
Absolutely. And you can put those right there on your Nook, and you've got the latest technology, and you're still contributing to local businesses.
And this is in stores now?
It'll come out June 10th. You can pre-order it now. It's $140. You can go to barnesandnoble.com or nook.com, which will just take you to the Barnes & Noble website, and pre-order it, and they'll ship out June 10th. And you can go put your hands on one at a Barnes & Noble store on June 10th as well. That's one of the great things about it is you can take it there to get it looked at or get some help with it or just go test it out.
This ebook revolution is here, isn't it?
It is.
It's not going away.
This last week, I believe it was as well, Amazon released that they're now selling more books digitally than they are in paper. Hmm. So it's the scale is tipped, and it's a great medium to use. You can use it in combination with books you already have. Books will be around for a while. They're great. There's nothing like the smell of a book or the feel of a book. I'm an English major, so I love my books. But I think where books are going is also very exciting.
Right.
So I'll keep my shelves full. They're already as full as they can be, though, so I like having an e-reader that I can pack full of electronic books and not have to kick stuff off to the attic.
We've done a pretty good job of scaring the Luddites who are listening now.
Yeah.
With a new digital wallet, more digital books. Those were both announcements last week. Anything coming up in the next couple of weeks that will change our digital landscape?
Yeah, absolutely. Monday is Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, and they've got some big announcements coming out. They're going to be talking about their new iOS operating system, the new OS Lion, and iCloud, which is another horse race that's going on right now between Google and Apple and Amazon, in this case, with cloud computing and music storage and things of that nature. So everything's going to go into the cloud here pretty soon, and Apple's going to talk about that on Monday.
Do you mind coming back after that and talking to us about what they talked about?
No, I'd be glad to.
All right. Tyrell Dennison, thank you very much.
You bet.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
The annual gathering of Walmart shareholders continues today. The event brings thousands of visitors to the region through the end of the week. Concerts, vendor fairs, and the annual shareholders meeting will take place this week. After a series of concerts for company employees and shareholders from artists including Bob Seger, the annual shareholders meeting is scheduled for Friday morning at Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus.
Gas prices in Arkansas are falling but remain higher than this time last year. According to ArkansasGasPrices.com, the cost of an average gallon of gas in Arkansas fell by almost a nickel last week to $3.59. Still, gas prices in Arkansas are about a dollar higher than this time in 2010. The national average cost for a gallon of gasoline is $3.77.
The University of Arkansas's Engineering Research Center will receive a $2.5 million renovation over the next 18 months. The university says most of the labs in the building are in good shape, but some general building issues need to be addressed. Electrical systems will be upgraded and safety features, including emergency lighting, will be improved.
Play is underway for the Arkansas Razorback golf team in Oklahoma today on the second day of the NCAA Golf Championships. The Razorbacks are in 12th place at the tournament in Stillwater. After 3 days of stroke play, the top eight teams will advance to a single elimination tournament to determine the national champions. This is the 18th time the golf team has advanced to the finals. Razorback golfer Austin Cook finished yesterday's first day of play tied for the fifth best score among all golfers.
And the Arkansas baseball team is traveling west today in advance of Friday's opening game in the NCAA tournament. The Hogs are the number 2 seed in the Tempe, Arizona regional that begins Friday. Arkansas will play the University of Charlotte Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock Central. The winner of that contest will play the winner of the Arizona State-New Mexico game Saturday night. The team that advances out of Tempe will play the winner of the regional being played this weekend in Austin, Texas.
And ahead on Ozarks at Large, your chance to win weekend passes to this weekend's Eureka Springs Blues Weekend. Headliners include, a lot of weekends there. Headliners include Elvin Bishop and Coco Montoya in all 34 different acts in 13 venues all over the village for a total of 62 performances for the 4 days. Today's trivia question, later, we'll give 3 lucky winners weekend passes for the event.
It's June 1st, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now from New Orleans on the phone is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Hey, Becca.
Hello, Arkansas. You know, one of the things that makes me sad about New Orleans is people come here and think Bourbon Street is all there is to see, and signs that say, I'm paraphrasing here, great big beer are the art of New Orleans. So today's topic is there's lots of cool art to see. There's an exhibit at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art called Preservation Hall at 50. Those of you who saw the Preservation Hall Jazz Band at the Walton Art Center, this is an exhibit celebrating their half century of existence. There's an exhibit at the New Orleans Museum of Art called Read My Pins, the Madeleine Albright Collection. I have not seen it yet. It's on the agenda.
That's been at the Clinton Museum in Little Rock.
There's an exhibit at Longview House, which is art in and of itself. The works of the late Crescent City photographer Clarence John Laughlin, who made his reputation shooting the decaying plantations of southern Louisiana. And it sounds glorious. Longview House is also on the agenda, so I've got to stay a week or two. And if you're fans of Pete the Cat,
yes,
we see him about twice a year at Iris at the Basin Spring, or Iris at Basin Park in Eureka Springs. If you want to see a whole wall of originals by James Dean, they're at Robbins Gallery on Royal Street. It's one of only like three galleries where he regularly has original works of art.
You have a full agenda.
I have a full agenda. And I'm running out of time. But I'm running out of time here, too, so I have to remind you what's going on in Northwest Arkansas.
Yes, please.
Walmart shareholders meetings mean music for everybody. And Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band plays tonight at 7 o'clock at Bud Walton Arena.
Woohoo!
If you don't know the drill, guests of Walmart and shareholders admitted first, Walmart associates next, and if seats remain, members of the public will be admitted after 6:45. That doesn't mean you should get there at 6:45. If you're really serious about seeing Bob Seger, I'd get in line. But you don't have to get in line for something really different at the Walton Art Center tonight, the Guy Fieri Food Show.
Oh, yeah, that he's got his bus out there right now.
The Crazy Man, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Guy's Big Bite, Tailgate Warriors. He's going to be at the Walton Art Center at 7. Tickets start at $35. He's going to cook. He's going to tell stories. There's going to be music. He promises it will be a foodapalooza.
All right. So we have a full agenda here as well.
Yes, you do. So take care of that for me. And I'm going to go eat some crawfish etouffee for you.
Excellent.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Northwest Arkansas is quickly becoming a very multi-ethnic region. According to Vilma Dominguez, diversity coordinator for the Rogers Lowell Area Chamber of Commerce, there are more than 125 dialects spoken in the region. Saturday in downtown Rogers, more than 50 countries will be represented at the 11th annual Northwest Arkansas International Festival. Dominguez says organizing such an inclusive event requires getting to know lots of people in the area.
You've got to have friends. That's how I do. I've been here since 1969. My family was the first minority family in Benton County. So I have lots of friends. And us minorities, we like to call people friends. We don't like to call, we make friends for life. And so we don't like to use the word networking. And so I have friends at the U of A with all kinds of departments. I have friends at Walmart Home Office. I also work a lot with the 7 resource groups that Walmart has. I work with all the groups at NWAC. And I just talk to everybody.
About 8,000 people attended last year's event, and Dominguez says she expects an even bigger crowd this year. Saturday's family-friendly festival will feature traditional ethnic foods, cultural exhibits, international dancing, music, and an international fashion show that's scheduled to begin at 1 o'clock. The Gentry Petting Zoo will be on hand, and children can also enjoy a visit from about 10 different characters, such as Mickey and Minnie Mouse and Dora the Explorer. Children will also be able to learn a little about the different countries thanks to an educational passport.
We'll have a little pamphlet that is called the International Festival Passport. And all the 54 countries, I can't remember, the flags will be in there where the children can color the flags. And then those flags will be in certain booths through the whole festival. The children, I say children, but usually adults like it too, because this is an education program. My goal is to educate everybody from all, you know, how we do it here in America, and then educate the whites on how other countries are, you know, what they look like, what they sound like, what they eat, what their flag looks like, and so on. So the kids will get these passports, all these flags on it. Certain booths will have the flag, one flag. Let's say like the Rogers Police Department will have a booth. They always get the American flag. And so the kids will get their passports at the children's activity area. Then they'll go to look. We'll look for the Rogers Police Department's booth. Then they have to go there and get it stamped or a sticker put on there, just like you would if you went to that country with your passport. And then when they fill out the entire passport, then they get put into a drawing.
While the event promises to provide an afternoon of free entertainment, it will also be an educational experience.
A lot of people don't know that there's, you know, over 50 countries represented in Northwest Arkansas. These are people that we work with, go to church with, we talk to, you know, do business with, and we need to get to know each other, our different cultures. They're learning from us, but we can learn from them. And I think it'll make Northwest Arkansas a better area to live in if we all get along better.
The 11th annual Northwest Arkansas International Festival is scheduled for 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. Some of the streets in downtown Rogers will be closed for the event, but parking will be available at the Chamber of Commerce, City Hall, and the Benton County offices. More information is available at rogerslowell.com or 636-1240.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Stephen Gates. Stephen, I'm going to call you the curator of the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music
That's
Festival.
Good. Okay. That's good enough. Sort of. It sounds a little better than administrator.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. and it's the first week's under the belt. Now we're in June, and
June. We're a little later than last summer. I think just because of the way the university schedule turned things around, we're into June, and we're moving this concert down to St. Paul's Parish Hall, which is that downtown location, lots and lots of relatively easy parking. I mean, St. Paul's has a big lot, and of course there's places around there. And for this program, we're doing another large-ish Bach piece. And again, the reason for putting them back-to-back is primarily that down at St. Paul's, we wanted to do something with harpsichord. Mm. And so this has a lovely, lovely harpsichord part, but it's really a piece that is referred to as an orchestral suite. And that just means a collection of sort of short pieces. It starts with a lovely prelude. There are movements of this, parts of this that will be familiar to some listeners. It features a really virtuosic flute part, which Rhonda Maines will play. And it's in B minor, so semi-serious key, but it's a lot of fun. It's a very bouncy, sort of rhythmically engaging piece, I think it's fair to say.
It's in the program, solo flute, small orchestra.
Small orchestra. In this case, that sort of means string quartet with bass and harpsichord. Very small orchestra. Yeah. But we didn't see the need, for balance reasons, to get more people than that.
Now, harpsichord is a familiar sound to me, but I don't recall seeing harpsichord that often. Am I not going to the right performances, or...?
Certainly around here, you don't see it used that often. I mean, it's an instrument that is almost exclusively used in music of the 17th and 18th mm-hmm. centuries. any Baroque composer that we might think of, Bach and Handel and Vivaldi and Corelli and those people whose names we may know, whenever you hear their music, almost, unless it's a piece for solo violin or solo cello or something, one would hear a harpsichord. And of course, it's played, harpsichordists would argue with me here, but it's played very much like a piano, and it has keys and has strings. But unlike the piano, where the strings are struck in a grand piano from below or in an upright piano from the front, harpsichord strings are plucked by a rather complicated mechanism. You can imagine to pluck a string and then not dampen it immediately. Mm-hmm. It's got a system that used to be quills and things like that. And so it has that very characteristic sort of plucky sound, but not loud. And so it works really, really nicely as sort of a, how should I say, a filling in instrument to sort of make the texture rather than the what some would think the thin sound of maybe a flute or and a violin and just a cello. The harpsichord sort of fills in the chords, and it's a lovely sound because it's somewhat transparent.
Who is the harpsichordist for this?
This is Bob Mueller again.
Oh, okay, Bob.
From our faculty. Bob is a many talented guy, and maybe most people know him as the conductor of the university orchestra, but he also is a first-rate composer and a wonderful pianist and harpsichordist. So we're, as I think I mentioned last week, we're playing a piece of his this summer. Right. And so people at the Chamber Music Festival will get to see him both as harpsichordist and as composer.
So Bach starts, and this is a rarity in the KUF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival because there are just two pieces on this because of the, and you have the Mendelssohn Octet.
Yeah, the Mendelssohn Octet is a pretty substantial piece. It's actually very, very well known among people who like chamber music. It's written for, I might say, a double string quartet. In other words, four violins, two violas, and two cellos. And it is just one of the great, great pieces of chamber music. It's got a very, very difficult virtuosic first violin part, which Eugene will be playing this summer. And we have back from last summer, Molly Sharp will be playing viola with us. And then we've invited the principal cellist of the Tulsa Symphony, a woman named Carrie Caldwell, who will come over and play cello with me in the octet. So it's going to be a lot of fun for us, and it's just one of those, like so many pieces by Mendelssohn, it's just good-natured, exciting, virtuosic, just an absolutely wonderful piece in which, in the last movement, he quotes, there's a quote from Handel's Messiah, because Mendelssohn was very interested in Baroque music. And so, as I say, I'm sure the Dr. Ned Ball's program notes will do better than I can by this, but it's a wonderful piece and great fun.
St. Paul's Episcopal Church?
St. Paul's.
7:30
Thursday, June 2nd.
Free.
And followed by a reception.
And followed by a reception. Stephen.
What's not to like?
I think you've got it all there.
We try.
And you'll be back as we go through the next
four. I hope so. Okay. I would enjoy it very much, Kyle.
Last week on Car Talk, you missed a brilliant demonstration of first-rate diagnostic skill.
Corn carriers are in there with their little backpacks, you know. And they
singing, hi-ho, hi-ho.
It's off to the muscle we go. Da, 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 da.
Do you hear any singing?
No.
You turn the engine off. Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk, Saturdays at 9 a.m. and again Saturday afternoons at 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Time for today's question. Winners, three winners.
Three.
Three winners drawn today from the Ceramic Cow will receive weekend passes to the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend that begins tomorrow and lasts through Sunday, and it takes place all over Eureka Springs. So three winners will each receive a pair of passes.
Yep, so three chances to win.
Right. Today is the 85th anniversary of the birth of Norma Jean Baker, better known, of course, as
Marilyn Monroe.
The actress, singer, and model died just after her 36th birthday in 1962. Her last public appearance was on May 19th of that year when she sang Happy Birthday to President John Kennedy. It's a rendition that's well known for its breathiness. Where did she sing that famous version of Happy Birthday? At the White House? At Madison Square Garden? or at Camp David. Again, where did Marilyn Monroe make her last public appearance to sing to President Kennedy? The White House, Madison Square Garden, or Camp David?
You can call in with your answer or guess to 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
All right, as you might be able to tell from that clip, a lot of people applauding, so it's probably not the White House.
Nope.
Probably not Camp David.
So the answer would be
Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
It was a big May. It was early, apparently. It wasn't his birthday, but it was a big birthday party for the president at Madison Square Garden.
It must have been huge if it was in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. I don't know the story behind why it was at Madison Square. Maybe it was a fundraiser?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
That might make sense.
It was before I was born.
Well, I just think of it like as a basketball arena.
Sure. Sure.
So that just seems odd to me to have a party there.
We'll,
but
we'll find out more.
Okay.
Three correct guesses will be taken from the ceramic cow, and those winners will receive
a pair of tickets.
Passes.
To
the entire week. That's okay. To the entire weekend at the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend that goes tomorrow through Sunday.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes from Walton Arts Center's 11th Annual Art of Wine Festival with the Guy Fieri Food Show today and tastings and events on June 10th and 11th. Proceeds from the Art of Wine Festival go to support Walton Arts Center's arts, learning, and educational programs. Tickets and information are available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
And local support for Ozarks at Large also comes from the University of Arkansas Sam M. Walton College of Business and the Business Innovation Series, presenting Moaz Limian, Ph.D., on Tuesday, June 7th from 11:30 until 1 p.m. at the U of A Reynolds Center. Lunch will be served and limited tickets are available. A link to more information is available at KUAF.com.
A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Diamond Cave.
And Diamond Cave is where?
It is just southwest of Jasper.
Just southwest. Well, it's a good place for a cave to be. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And tomorrow?
A new show.
That's right, beginning at noon.
Have a good day.
And happy National Running Day.